Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 794. Let's go to the Nerdist Community Court Board. Lots of fun stuff going on. Jonathan Freeman writes, Las Vegas has a thriving local comedy scene. The open mics are supportive, well-attended, and fun. Unfortunately, very little in the way of local comedy shows that are not anchored to the casinos. Stand-up at the casinos means competing with slot machines, booze, boobs for the audience's attention. I know. I know, Jonathan, and it's one of the reasons why I don't perform in Vegas very often. But I'm so glad to hear that there is a thriving local comedy scene. So, The Good Show is a show that he's producing at the Bunkhouse Saloon in Downtown Arts District, which is great, completely revitalized. There's also a really cool arcade down there that it's like an arcade bar that you should go check out. Show dates for his show can be found at his Facebook page, which is facebook.com/bunkhouselv. Bunkhouselv. Then Marcel Raphael writes, the Harry Potter Alliance turns fans into heroes. Our community of activists, nerds, and pop culture enthusiasts has tackled all kinds of important issues, from marriage equality to ethical cocoa sourcing. The Friends of the Operating Library fundraiser will be announcing their annual international book drive, Akio Books. This year they're working with Masaka HPA, that's our chapter in Uganda, to raise books for the Good Shepherd School in Masaka. They will send thousands of books to the school in order to stock its brand new library. And the campaign also supports three local U.S. events to advocate for increased support for public libraries. Previous Akio Books campaigns have raised over 250,000 books for communities in need, and they couldn't have done it without the generous support of their community. To find out more, donate, go to Indiegogo and search Operating Library. This I saw on the Nerdist subreddit, which of course is just r/Nerdist. Hey, Nerdist people, my husband Jim Nyland is an avid consumer of comedy and nerdy things and a loyal listener to the Nerdist podcast. Thank you, Jim. His 50th birthday is approaching March 29th, and I wonder if you could help me surprise him by shouting out to him on social media and or the podcast. Happy birthday, Jim Nyland! It's your 50th birthday, Jim. And I want to tell you something. Not only is Jim an avid comedy consumer and finds time to watch comedy and listen to Nerdist podcasts and watch a lot of great other stuff, but they have six kids. Two 17-year-olds, a 19-year-old, a 21-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 13-year-old. Six kids, and they still find time. And they all get together, and they kind of, like, they bond as a family over Nerdist stuff. So he's a VP of sales for Get Fresh Produce in the Chicago suburb. So thanks to Jim over at Get Fresh. You know what? If you're on Twitter, maybe give Jim Nyland, at Jim Nyland, that's J-I-M-N-Y-L-A-N-D, a big old happy birthday hug on the Twitter. And on Instagram, he's James Nyland, because he's more formal on Instagram. And there you go. So happy birthday, Jim. I hope you have a great 50th birthday, and thank you so much for supporting. And we adore you, and we send you hugs. And also, your wife is rad. And that's his wife, Beth Nyland, because as the old saying goes, no man is an island. Huh? No man is a Nyland. And his Beth is his... Oh, explaining the jokes is always the best part. Anyway, happy birthday to you, Jim. This episode is Reggie Watts. Reggie Watts, dear, dear, dear old friend who I've known for a very long time, since a lot of you were probably in grade school. He, of course, is on The Late Late Show with James Corden on CBS every night. And he's in a new film called Creative Control, which you should absolutely watch. And anything that you can find of Reggie's online, the man is a friggin' genius. He, and not just a creative arts genius, he is a legitimate genius. Conversation with Reggie range from farts to accents to regional dialects to particle physics. I absolutely adore him, and I'm so happy that he was able to come back on the podcast. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 794 with Mr. Reggie Watts. Katie, roll the thing. That was my vocal scratch DJing. Always better when you explain it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Your Honor. So this is a quick summons. This is my client here has found that the process that we're running into is going to be delayed by 2 months, which isn't in the agreement, but we're hoping to get past that today.
Why didn't you include that in your motion?
Well, quite frankly, we weren't prepared, and as taking on the new client, I had to take over the paperwork from his prior representation, so that's why.
He murdered the previous judge.
Well, that's conjecture.
Actually, I'll allow it.
Just say random.
I'll allow it. Good. Okay. Case closed? Case closed.
I guess.
That's what judges say.
To be honest, I'm not really a judge. I was just cleaning up the office and you guys came in and sat down. I didn't even like the other guy.
Hey, it was, you know what? It was practice.
But
it was practice.
Since I'm in this chair, I get to make those determinations. You're free.
That's how law works.
Whatever that guy did, I'm sure he was a dick.
Oh, my God. Perfect.
Welcome, Mr. Watts.
Thank you.
So you're doing a show tonight. You're doing your own show tonight.
My own show. Yes, I'm doing a show tonight. I'm doing the band thing that we do every night.
Nice.
Which is, but your show's
no, besides
at nine.
Our show's at 9.
I mean, technically I could if I went first, but where is it at?
Meltdown.
Oh, Meltdown.
no, Meltdown.
Oh, Meltdown.
Meltdown.
Oh, Meltdown Man.
No. Okay, now you just added another word. Okay. Meltdown.
Okay, fine. Whatever, Frenchie. I might be able to do it because I have to be there by 10:30.
Yeah, yeah. If you could go up first.
Yeah.
And you know, if you only want to do 10 or 15 or 20 minutes or
that'd
whatever.
Be great.
The show starts at 9. You'll be done by 9:20.
Yeah, I would love that. Let's
okay.
do it.
Great.
Okay.
You're in.
Great. I made it.
Do you want to, or do you want me to set any audio up stuff up for you, or you?
Oh, I'll probably just, if there's one DI, because sometimes I not do things.
You not
with,
do things
with music.
Sometime I not do things.
Sometime I not do thing, but sometime maybe tonight.
Let's see how long we can communicate without any. Let's eradicate plurals.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I love talking like that. No, that didn't work.
That was actually fun.
Oh, was that good? Okay, fuck. Oh well.
The problem is you used two word.
Yes, I did. I did use two word. Yeah,
Reggie Watt.
Yes, what? It's like, is that plural? It's like it is plural. Oh, I didn't know that. It's crazy.
How many watts are there?
There's a lot.
Okay.
Obviously,
there's a lot.
Watts. Yeah, it's a good thing that the unit is called a 1 watt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the guy's name was Watts. So they've shortened it to watt.
Yeah.
How many watts?
Well, that's
a 1 watt amplifier.
Well, at least that guy isn't Thomas Crapper.
Gross. That guy, Thomas Crapper. Real.
Whose name became synonymous
with
pooping.
The Crapper.
Yeah.
The Crapper. Well, he invented the outhouse, right?
I think he invented the toilet.
The toilet itself, like the flushing toilet?
He invented a type of toilet.
Okay.
And I think it was that sort of like gravity-based.
It's gravity-fed.
You know, where it's... it's free. They're free-range toilets, gravity-fed. They're not kept in cages.
Nope. They're not fed that synthetic gravity.
So synthetic gravity is a great name for like a fucking trip hop band.
Yeah, totally. It's like, oh, I love these guys.
I love synthetic gravity.
They're the best. So, we make our own gravity. Like, whoa, heavy.
They were supposed to open for Black Hole, but then Black Hole just completely destroyed.
Oh man, there was nothing left. They were squashed to the size of a quark.
How are you handling having this structured of a life where you're at Corden, you know, most days of the week? I would imagine 5 days a week?
Yeah, 4 days.
4 days.
Yeah, Crondon.
But you still have to be there between...
I do. 2:30 and 6:30.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. I mean, anybody with a job, which is most people, will say, like, that's an amazing schedule. And it's true. But the regularity is a weird thing for me. It's weird to go, you know what? I'm going to go to New York. Oh, I only have 3 days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I'll have to... How do I maximize the time? So, I mean, it cuts down on spontaneity a little bit, like what can I do, where can I go? But you know, it is a platform. I have to always look at the good of it, which is, oh, it's a platform to to have more visibility, to possibly leverage more opportunity or something like that.
I mean, and you did get to sing at BB-8, which was...
That's true. Yeah, even though they were very, like, the Disney police were like, it can't appear as though BB-8 is doing a duet with you. He's not part of the band. You know, I understand they don't want BB-8 to be associated with the band, the Late Late Show band. I get that.
Did they think people were going to watch and go, oh, they added this soccer ball robot to the lineup?
I don't know
what he's playing, triangle, or so he's playing sphere.
It's so weird. He has a salad bowl on top of a bowl. I guess
he's in the band because they didn't say he wasn't.
He looks kind of familiar. Those cute noises. So there was like a lot of like going back and forth about what he could do and what he can't do. Oh, it was an ant.
God, it is a fucking flying ant.
It's a flying ant. I don't know what you do. I guess you just let him do his thing.
Should I?
No, don't kill him. He's going to be fine.
Oh, there's a bunch of them.
Oh, weird. Ah! Where are they? No, he's ant guy.
You died on the way over here.
It's like, oh, shit, he is dead. That's
weird.
What
do you want to do? Why? Is it a termite?
That I don't know. If it's a termite, it should be destroyed.
No, I think it's a flying ant who's trying to start a new colony.
Yeah, get out of here. Go, fly.
All right, Katie, you have to kill it.
Did it?
He's on the ground.
He's fine. Just don't worry about him now. Once he's on the ground, that's it.
I mean, we're moving out of here in a couple of weeks. If a colony of ants take over this room, it doesn't really affect us in any way.
They're probably just scoping it out for their podcast.
Yeah, the ants just looking for casting possibilities for some of the Disney Channel shows.
Like, ant cast! Hi, we're ants! That's it. That's all they say.
We're ants. Can you be a little more anty?
Look, I just found a chemical trail.
Bye!
Okay.
Got work to do.
That's so weird. We referenced chemtrails in the meeting today at midnight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You become a psychic when you do your weird ant character.
Well, you know, I will go into ant mode next time I need to solve some crazy ineffable problem.
Your voice, even singing the song at BB-8, who...
Yes.
I'm sorry, is he in the band? I wasn't clear on that.
No, he's not.
He's,
I mean, the idea is that, oh, he's a friend we met at the Critics' Choice Awards, and I took a picture with him, and I was like, hey, baby, and gave the puppeteer a little bit of a nudge. I don't think he got it, but I was just like, oh, I was like, how is that operating by itself? I'm like standing next to him going,
right.
I wonder if someone's controlling it, that kind of a thing, and he was just like not, he was nonplussed.
I'm controlling it.
He was like, I'm controlling it.
No, I know, but it's like when you're trying to get someone
doing it though.
When you're used to hang out with comedians, but you realize the rest of the world does a yes and every bit.
I know, totally. They're not like bitten each other. I'm the guy that does, and you're the. Anyways.
And then you have to explain. See, I know. I thought it'd be funny if we just assume that he was autonomous and not.
I'm just controlling this puppet. Okay. Bye. So the idea was like, oh, we met at the thing and we're friends and we talked about doing something together, and that was kind of it. So we don't actually say anything about what the arrangement is. But anyways, they ended up just cutting it together, make it look like a duet. Anyways, fine. It was
but
fine.
You said your voice is amazing. Your voice is ridiculous.
Oh man,
it makes me angry how amazing your voice is.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
There's no waiver. Just like every fucking note is just like an Olympic landing. Bam. It's, you know, because I do so much talking with everything.
Yes.
And
but you have a great voice.
My voice is shredded all the time because I can't. I talk loudly all the time.
Do you ever? Did you ever like talk to vocal whatever coaches about like how you produce your tones?
I went to a vocal coach before I shot my last special in 2012 because I was starting to lose my voice on the road.
Yes,
and I was very worried that I was going to lose my voice for the special because I was doing so many shows. And so he did. He taught me how to talk, and because I get so excitable when I talk that I tense up and I force air through my cords.
Yeah.
And so for like a week, I was actually doing stand up the way you're supposed to talk properly.
Yeah.
And it was throwing me off.
Oh, you were too conscious.
It was throwing off my rhythm, the way I talk, mm-hmm. and the rhythm of the joke. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, I think I'm just going to be hoarse all the time.
Yeah, or Captain Steroids.
Yeah, you know,
you ever done that?
One time I had to do a show and they gave me these three little pills.
Yeah.
And it just like everything, it was weird. It wasn't that like it went numb. I just couldn't feel that I had a throat anymore.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And you know, my doctor was like, it's not a good idea to do this very often. Mm-mm. So yeah, I did it one time.
No, it's weird. I remember a friend of mine who had lost her voice. It was a long time ago. And she said, it's like you're driving a car, or like you're in a car, but you're not driving it.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like, because it doesn't feel connected to your body in a weird sort of way, but you're still producing sounds.
Yeah, it's like you're watching yourself produce sounds. You're like, where am I right now?
I don't know if people realize, like, it's not that you're not doing damage, it just makes it so that you can't feel that you're doing horrible damage.
Yeah,
so that's why it's bad.
Yeah, it reduces the, you know, it's like it's all inflammation, so it's like the steroid reduces the inflammation, but it feels weird because it's artificially getting rid of your inflammation so you can like temporarily for a moment have your voice back.
How do you maintain yours? You just sing all the time, so your voice is...
Yeah, I sing all the time. Like, I was worried in the beginning because I was doing every Tuesday night at El Cid with the band, with the Late Late Show band, and we were just doing improv for like 2 hours straight, and I was worried about, you know, fucking my voice up, but like it was fine. It was... I would get hoarse the next day, but I would notice that as long as I didn't smoke weed, as long as I just treated myself well, like as though I were kind of like an athlete. I didn't warm up or anything like that, but I'm singing at the Late Late Show anyways, and I'm always singing throughout the day. So I feel like I keep myself naturally warmed up.
Yeah.
And then when I do these big shows, I just try to be conscious of not pushing my voice too much.
Did you stop smoking and did you just switch to edible?
I mean, I'm primarily an edible guy anyways. So the smoking was just like, you know, it's a social thing. You're backstage and the band's like, hey, man, we're going to have a great show tonight. Hey, this is strawberry. You know, and I'm like, how can I not have strawberry? Smells like strawberry.
You could just eat a strawberry. I know, but this is a new way to enjoy strawberry.
So cool, strawberry. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I try, and now I just try to, like, there's this marijuana soft drink that you ran into it at the Riot Fest. It was a Sprig.
Oh, I didn't know that's what that was. I'm glad I didn't drink it.
Oh,
that would have ruined my
Sprig. Do not
I feel really weird.
Don't drink an entire can.
Oh my God, that's sort of the problem with legalizing marijuana, is it just like sneaks into shit.
I know. You're like, is this marijuana? It's pretty soon people are going to have marijuana paranoia. They're like, is this? I can't eat anything. It's a new eating disorder.
Well, at that point, I might as well just eat it, because I would get the paranoia if I ate it. So if I'm going to have it when I'm not eating it, I might as well just get it both ways.
California, man.
Is everything is marijuana now.
Yeah.
I remember we were at, this might have been like in Vancouver. We were some, it was Vancouver because it was Canada. And you had gone to some super high-end edible chocolate
shop. The lady.
Shop.
Yeah, the lady. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we were about to fly out. We were like an hour away from leaving for the airport, and we were at a diner. And you had these two hunks of marijuana chocolate. And you were like, fuck it. So you got hot water and just melted it into the hot water and drank it like that.
That's right.
Because you couldn't leave with it.
Yeah, that's right.
You smuggled it in your blood.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, just temporarily. And then I get an entire like transfusion, and then they pull it out.
Do you – I assume
– my mule.
I assume
– blood mule. I take a special chemical so it doesn't actually get absorbed into my body.
A blood mule sounds like a weird airbender character.
Oh, yeah. Blood mule.
I'm a blood mule.
I am the blood mule, level 5.
But I assume it's probably the same. You must understand. Well, if I consume this much, I'll get this kind of high, and if I don't push too far, I mean, do you ever get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm too high, and what does that feel like?
Yeah, you know, when I'm driving and people are honking. It's like
and my car is on its side. One wheel's just spinning.
Yeah, totally. When the ground is like I can see
when
it
the
from
ground
my
is in the sky.
Yeah,
and
totally.
The sky is in the ground.
Synthetic gravity.
Synthetic gravity.
Synthetic gravity. Buy it in stores. Yeah, I definitely get too high for sure. I mean, the edibles are tough. I mean, when I first saw the sprig can, I didn't have it in my bag for some reason. Like, it was gone. Like, probably someone just took it. And someone else had that can. I was like, what is that? Oh, my God. What? I was, like, so excited about it. And then finally, someone found a can for me, and I drank, like, half of it. And someone was like, don't just drink a quarter of it.
Well, why wouldn't they just give it to you in a smaller serving?
You know, ask the entire edibles industry. It's my biggest pet peeve about edibles. It's like, here's a cookie. Like, oh, that's a beautiful cookie. Yeah, only have a 16th of it.
Just break off a crumb.
Like a crumb? What are you talking about? Just make the cookie.
Just make them smaller.
The size, the dose that a normal, because you're going to want to eat one cookie.
Right.
So just make the one cookie the dose that you're supposed to have, like 5 milligrams, which is the standard basic unit of highness, right? But this can has 45 milligrams in it. So so you're like, you know, it's, oh, this is tasty. And then next thing you know, you've drank like three quarters of a can of it. And it's a good high, but it's definitely not, you don't want to do much technical stuff.
You know, at this point, if I accidentally did that, it's been, and even though weed for me was only, I only ever did a handful of times because it made me so paranoid, but if I ever accidentally did, I would just fucking run onto the freeway, scream, like I would be uncontrollable. I would freak out. I'm so not used to feeling anything odd happening with my body that I honestly don't know what would happen.
It's a hard one. I mean, I will say that I am focused.
You've convinced me. What?
It's like, that was so easy. It's like, no. Here you go, Chris. Here's some new. No, I mean, the thing is, like, I think microdosing is the key. I think taking like 2.5 milligrams, like if you're at home, it's like just enough of a hint of something to, like, if you wanted to relax and kind of not be like, I'm thinking about all the millions of things I have to do, which is that's my thing. It's like, I get too locked into all the overwhelming things coming at me that especially when it's an edible and it's like the right dose, I kind of kick back and I watch my favorite shows and I just kind of get back into the moment a little bit more easily.
You create synthetic gravity.
I do. It's my own synthetic gravity. My very own. But I don't know. I mean, I think like microdosing is the key. I don't like to get like, it's my thing is not to get like hyper fucked up. It's more like a subtle augmentation. And something like Sprig is interesting because, and I'm not promoting it, I'm just saying what I like about it is that it's super scientifically measured. So it's very, very precise. And the type of strain that they use, everything is super controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this consistency, which is dreadfully lacking in most edibles.
What does it taste like?
It's kind of grapefruity, like a effervescent grapefruit with a tinge of, you can definitely taste a little bit of weed in it, but it's really nice. Like you put it in like a little shot glass, and that amount, like, I don't know, it's a perfect amount for me. But I don't know, I'd love to develop my own products with like St. John's wort mixed with like a little bit of CBD weed or whatever to just kind of help with anti-inflammatory stuff. Like, I want to get more science-y, so it's less like, man, I'm gonna get fucked up.
Are you gonna end up becoming like Miracle Max and living in a tree? And
yes. Yes, and I'm going to finally remake the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Finally! Someone finally is going to remake that movie. I mean, of all the reboots, I can't win. Well, of course, you got to do the origin story.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah, and who's going to be Don Knotts? It's like, I don't know. You know.
Who is today's Don Knotts?
I don't know who Don Knotts.
Who, I don't know who our Don Knotts is. Oh, could be Jack McBrayer.
Oh, that could be it. Yes, because he's got the accent.
He's got a little bit of this, you know.
If he got more animated, a little bit more animated, yeah, he could do it. That would be it.
He's really funny. I love Jack.
He's amazing. Yeah, I love him in the new was it the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret?
Oh yeah, yeah,
I think they just now called Todd.
They just call it Todd Margaret.
Yeah, yeah, which is brilliant. But he's such a weirdo. It's so cool to see him in London.
Have you ever gone a length of time where you said, you know, I'm not gonna eat any weed for a while and just kind of see what happens to my brain?
Totally.
And what happens to your brain?
I don't really notice much of a difference, to tell you the truth. You know what it is? It's like it gets. I'm a little bit more. I don't know. I'm just a little mellower, I guess, in a way. Like, if, for instance, if I go on tour and I'm you know, touring in Europe, most of the time you're not going to really run into weed. You'll run into hash, but you have to like work at getting it. And I don't really like to work at finding weed. So I just don't do it. And I don't do it for a month or something like that. I don't really notice. Like I don't go through a period of time where I'm like, I haven't had that weed. I really need that weed. I don't really notice it. It's just more like if it's around, then I'll do it once in a while. But like, I don't really have that thing. I've never been like the type of guy that's like, cocaine, which I've tried twice in my life, and it just felt like I just took four shots of espresso, and I feel gross. But I don't really have that addictive of a personality when it comes to drugs, I guess.
I never did that. I never did anything else because I was always terrified, A, that my I would feel like my heart was going to explode.
Exactly.
And then I also was afraid, like, oh, what if it's the greatest thing in the world? What if it's the greatest thing in the world, and then that's it?
Yeah.
You know, because I at least was aware. I knew that I drank a lot, so I felt like, I think maybe I might have an addictive personality. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll just keep it to beer for a while.
Sure.
And then but there were days where I would wake up near the end where I was like, I don't think I'm doing this well. I don't think this is the right thing to do anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I sensed. Mm-hmm. So I was always too afraid that I was just gonna like rah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. That's what I think many people's fear about that. But I will say this. Most of the time, the synthetic drugs, like whether it's MDMA or MDA or whatever the hell, 2CB, all that stuff, it's good the first time. It's amazing the first time. And then you're just chasing the first time. And it just becomes depressing.
Yeah.
So I remember, I think I did MDMA or ecstasy 3 times. And the first time I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. I'm getting so much emotional insight. And I'm connecting with my 2 friends that I'm doing it with. And it's really amazing. The second time I was like, it's pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. And the third time it wasn't as good. And I just immediately realized, oh, it's never going to be as good as that first time.
Right.
So I just never did it again. So like and then cocaine was like, whatever. And I think I tried it for real once. I tried cocaine for real once in Cleveland.
Tells a lot of the story.
That's where you do it. I had a gig at the Grog Shop, which is this dope place in Cleveland, and then afterwards, like some people were like, "Hey, come on over for this after party, or whatever." It was like 6 people, 7 people at this cool like craftsman house close to the lake, and this neurosurgeon guy, this like really badass like kind of country renowned neurosurgeon, came over and he had a huge bag of cocaine.
Oh my god!
And it was just like, well, here's the cocaine, guys. And I was like, okay, well, here I am at this kind of quasi deadhead's house with a neurosurgeon who just pulled out a bag of cocaine. I guess if anybody that I'm going to trust's cocaine, I guess it would be the neurosurgeon.
The neurosurgeon, yeah.
So I did like the thing where people have a line and then they hang out for a little while and then they have another. I think I had like 3 lines or something like that. I don't like snorting, so I had to really kind of just pretend I was someone else. But I kind of got it. It kept me up a little bit. I didn't get the talkative thing like people said, but again, it wasn't really – it didn't do anything for me. Enough so much, or so much that I felt like I needed to do that again or find cocaine. So I don't know. I feel like I feel lucky in that respect. Now all I got is weed. I just eat weed. That's
I feel
it.
Like, you know, even asking for drugs to me seems comical. Or like, do you guys have any cocaine? Like even saying that seems
so weird.
So ridiculous. I think maybe it was like a year or two after college. This girl invited me to a party. This girl that I kind of knew in college invited me and Mike Furman, actually. We were roommates at the time. It's like 1995, to a party. And she was like, yeah. And just the way she said it was so weird. She goes, yeah, there's going to be, you know, it'll be a fun party. There's going to be music and like some booze. There's going to be, you know, weed, crack, nachos. Like it was just like, she just like dropped the word crack in there.
Oh,
we're like, what? Like it just sounded so weird to say. It's like, you don't speak it out loud.
It's
just,
it's a joke. It's like a joke on the news.
Yeah. But we laugh. We're like, but she didn't laugh. So it was like, they really were having crack at the party, but it was just such a weird thing to.
Wow.
We ended up not going to the party.
Good idea.
Mike and I were very straight-laced kids. So actually, one of the few times I ever did weed was with Furman, who went through a period where he, you know, like he would smoke semi-regularly.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it anymore. Hasn't for years, but he had this box that he got at the Sharper Image in the 80s, which should tell you something.
Yep.
And it was called the Light, LYTE, and it was a wand. And one half of the light was this like was green, and one half was red, and it measured the bass and treble. One measured the green, red measured the treble, and the red measured the bass. And so it would spin in patterns, and you hook it up to your stereo, and it would create these insane flourishing light
the 3D patterns.
Like flowers, like a spirograph kind of thing. And we determined the best album to listen to high watching the light was Steve Miller Band's Greatest Hits.
Oh my God, that's great.
Because especially on like Fly Like an Eagle, we're like, what? Like we were just the fucking stereotypical like, whoa, the fucking light is crazy. And then I started to get like, my heart's beating really fast. You know, it's like I started to get paranoid.
Who am I? I don't know what I am.
I don't know what I am.
Am I consciousness?
What are we? What are these
what
words?
What does matter?
Words,
I know
words,
what are words.
Words.
Why do we understand
words,
them?
Words. I can feel my skin. Like it was one of those. And then, that pretty much did.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
I did. It was a lot of kind of like balling up at the end near the corner and just being like, okay, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God, I know that. I've had it. Although, like, when I'm doing that, I'm just like, oh, that's cool. This is that thing that people talk about. That's cool. Enjoy it.
You're even chill with that. You're even chill with your freak out.
Totally. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, actually, the only time I think I ever felt like I was in danger was in Amsterdam when I did an entire space muffin, which someone didn't – they didn't tell me that because I was used to doing the whole thing. Like, when you get a space cake, you do the whole space cake. And someone didn't warn me that you're supposed to have half of this one. Anyways, I did it, and I had like the worst set of my life at Boom Chicago, where I went a half an hour too long and didn't remember the last 45 minutes of my set. And then my friends all left me, and I was like, yeah, they're like, you're okay, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm totally fine. I'm outside of Boom Chicago, and there's like, was it Dom Square or whatever? That's like some square that it's located on. And there's like, you know, a restaurant with like outdoor seating that has like a little chain railing or like kind of a chain to cordon it off. And so I sat down on a bench because I felt like I couldn't stand anymore. And I sat down on the bench, had my face in my hands, and a few times I tried to get up, and I just couldn't. I was so dizzy. I just felt sick, and I just kind of sat there. So I just sat there for like an hour and a half. The lady came out from the restaurant, closed the shop, and then raised the chain of the fence to be higher or whatever to say, like, we're closed or whatever. And so she just left me there, and I was there. And then, like, maybe 2 seconds – or, like, maybe – I don't know. Like, after an hour and a half, her being gone, the place being closed – I hear, Reggie? And I'm like, what? And I look up, and it's this other Reggie. His name's Reginald. Reginald D. Hunter, comedian, expat from Chicago, I think, who lives in London. I had no idea why he was in Amsterdam. And he's like, Reggie? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, man, you okay? I'm like, I can't move. I don't know. And he's like, oh, I'll help you. And then he and his girl got me up.
Who's also named Reggie.
Who's also named Regina. Spectre. He was dating Regina Spectre.
Yeah.
Who they call Reggie.
Works out, yeah.
The three Reggies. What should we do tonight? We've got so much R power.
We're going to carry the one R around Amsterdam and totally. Hope he doesn't throw up on us.
When one R fails, the other two are there to pick them up.
Yep.
But they like took me back to my hotel and got a new hotel key, put me in bed and everything. It was like totally random out of the blue. Didn't see him again for the rest of the trip, but saw him like a year later at the Dublin Comedy Festival.
Thanks for having me in Amsterdam. I was never in Amsterdam.
I know. I was like, what are you talking about, man? No. But I was very weird. But that was the only time that I felt like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to resolve this issue other than just stay here until I'm not high anymore and hope that no one fucks with me.
Holy shit. Well, crazy. Maybe I told you this, but I was on a plane a few years ago and someone was watching something on their laptop, and it was a concert, and I guess it was Madison Square Garden because it said Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. I was going to do that thing where I got very engaged in what the person once went over and one up was watching on the plane in the aisle.
Yeah,
and I had like a moment of, am I hallucinating? Because all of a sudden you walk out on stage and it was the LCD sound system. It was like that last tour that he was doing.
Yes.
And you just appeared on the screen and in my like, you know, it's really late at night on a plane. I'm like, what am I? Like, I thought I was dreaming because you just appeared on the screen. So how did you get involved with the LCD sound system?
It was very strange. I did the this festival in Australia, New Zealand called the Big Day Out, mm-hmm. which is no longer. The summer before, or the Australian summer before the Madison Square Garden for the LCD. LCD was on the bill for this tour. I was doing this like I was a stand up weirdo comedian for this festival within the festival, and we toured parallel with the festival, and we had our own venue inside of the festival. Anyways, they were there, you know, Deftones, Rammstein, like all these crazy rock bands, and I had never seen LCD Sound System before, so I finally got to see them, and I was like, oh, these guys are incredible. They're all playing every part that you hear. There's nothing sequenced. Everyone's playing it by hand. It's like artisan electronic music. And I was totally impressed by them. And then I realized that they were playing this song called 4433, I think is the name of it, that sounded like a song that I thought some band sampled a vocal of mine from a band that I had in the mid-90s called Mock Tube. And we had a song called You Can't Hide. And the chorus was, "You can't hide. You can't hide." That was it. And so when I'd be out in Williamsburg and I'd hear like this song come on the speaker, I was like, what? Did this band sample me and kind of tune it down a little bit? I don't know. And then I gave that up. And then I realized it was LCD that was singing that song. And I didn't say anything about it. I was like, oh, that's crazy. I just noted it. I watched them five more times in all the cities that they played in. Afterwards, I had some nice conversations with Nancy, his right hand man. And Murphy, and so like we talked, blah blah blah. Then that was over. I was going back to New York, and then I heard, oh, they're playing their last show at Madison Square Garden, and then I immediately thought, okay, I have some friends at DFA. I'm gonna try to see if I can get some tickets to go see them. And then I heard about the thing where the scalpers like mm-hmm. bought up all the tickets, and they were like, okay, fuck you, scalpers. We were adding four shows at Terminal 5, and they're going to be free to devalue the tickets that the scalpers.
That's awesome.
And so it's great. It's a Rolling Stones trick. And I was like, oh, that's great. Then I get an email from Nancy saying like, hey, do you want to play with us at Madison Square Garden? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was like, yeah, of course. I would love that. That's even better than getting tickets. And
you still got to buy the tickets, though.
Yeah, it's just like, sorry, man. You still have to buy the tickets, and you have to buy a specific pair of shoes. What? okay. But like, yeah, so then I show up at the rehearsal space, and okay, what do you guys want me to do? And this is like totally crazy synchronicity. They want me to sing the You Can't Hide part in 4433, and there's four vocal parts, so I could have done any of the other ones, but that's the specific one they wanted me to do. And then I called up, pulled up the song on my phone. I was like, listen to this. And everyone, the whole band listened, and everyone was like kind of silent for a second. They were like, that's really weird. And everyone was like, that's very weird. But that's the part I ended up singing. So in that,
so there was a complete coincidence,
total coincidence.
You don't think it's possible that it just like one of them, maybe Murphy heard it somewhere and it just got stuck in his brain and he didn't realize.
It's possible, but I mean, Mock Tube was such a regional, it was a Northwest band. Mm-hmm. It didn't really have much exposure out east, you know, and he's like I think he's an East Coast guy or Midwest East Coast guy. I don't know how he would have heard that. I mean, I don't know. I played it for him. I think he would have thought, you know, he would have been like, oh, I listen to Mock Tube or something, but no one. And there wasn't like a look of like, well, I'm not going to tell him that I knew about it. You know, it was just, it was just an honest like, that's crazy. You can't, and it's the same notes. You can't hide. And then their version is, your love away from me, world. You can't hide. That was it. And mine was like, you can't hide. You can't hide. It's just very, 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 very bizarre. But anyways, that's how it came about. We were like, on tour, we kind of connected, and he's a fan of comedy. He's like a huge comedy fan, so he liked my comedy, and we got along, so that's how it happened.
What are your stage shows like now? I mean, just seeing so one of the most fun things that I've ever gotten to do was that tour we did in like 2004.
I know, right?
We toured. I'm not telling you this because you know this. I'm just telling you this. Mike Furman and I were doing Hard and Firm, and we paired up with you because you were kind of a fresh transplant to L.A. at that point, I think. Or you were just popping up around L.A.
I was popping up around L.A., yeah.
And I saw you the first time at UCB, and we did a tour of the West Coast to almost literally no one.
Yes, that's right.
We did some really amazing venues like the Triple Door,
mm-hmm.
and then we did some smaller bar venues, and and to almost no one.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun because none of us were doing anything that had any exposure at the time.
Yeah.
So there was no way to get – like I don't even know how people would have known to come out and
right.
see us.
I know. No podcast.
This was kind of a pre-social media era. Yeah. There wasn't – couldn't tweet it out. It was just like – yeah, no podcasts, no anything. It was just all like old school local promotion, and you know, the in each of the cities, the people were like, "No, thank you."
But no fancy shows for us, thank you.
But it was so much fun because you know, our approach was, you know, our songs were sort of like sketches in that,
yeah,
they were built, and that's what they were,
yes,
every time. And your show changed. Every show was different, although I think. That's where I think maybe you evolved Fuck Shit Stack,
yes,
on
for
that,
sure,
on that tour.
Absolutely.
And it started – it kind of evolved throughout the show,
yeah,
and then really kind of became Fuck Shit Stack by the end
that's
of
right.
it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But do you still – is your show still that improvisational in terms of like whatever you feel like doing in the moment, or is it more structured now? Is your live show more structured?
It's still pretty improvised. I mean, I definitely have – I have tropes and modes that I can go into, you know, be like physical humor or a song, this style of a song or something like that.
Or languages.
But, yeah, languages, weird sounds. Like there are things that it's kind of like a gear shift. You know, it's like a gearbox. Like I just have different gears I can go to. What happens once I go into that gear, who knows? But so that's enough of a structure. And then I'm always monitoring myself, trying to do new things. I'm always trying to approach things in new ways. So it's still pretty, I'd say 95% improvised.
How do you know when to release? Like if you decide like, oh, I want to release an album, like what is that now? Like if so much of your stuff is improvised and it's so in the moment, how do you capture that on a like on a what would be a traditional
right.
means to give content out to people?
Yeah, right. I mean, they're just improvised, you know, like so both of my specials were just me. Like my first special was me performing in three different shows. And they just edited between the three different shows. And then my second one was – or actually my second one was just one show. It was a live at Central Park. And that was just one show. So that was one show and then interspersed with like, you know, sketches. The one that I'm about to do for – well, I guess I can't say who's for. But the one that is going to happen, you'll hear an announcement about, will be – like a theater show, but I'm going to run it twice. So so an audience will come and experience it like a theater show. There'll be bits that happen.
Are you a Kurzweilian subscriber?
Like Singularian?
Yes.
Not so much. I think that he's right about the technology that we're creating will become a little bit more biologically adaptive. Mm-hmm. I think that will happen. I don't think like implants, you know, like becoming machines, like by placing machines within our bodies. I just don't think that that's necessary. I think that we'll develop different relationships to technology. I can imagine at some point someone being able to make you feel as though you were in a telepresence robot. So
sure.
You're in Tokyo and you're like, oh, I feel like I really am in Tokyo. I can feel the breeze on my skin. But we have a way of transmitting the sensations from thousands and thousands of miles away. So I imagine that could happen. But I just don't think we need to like, I need a cybernetic arm. Unless you like lost an arm and you need a...
Right.
But people electively like putting microchips under their skin. I mean, there'll always be some cyber geeks that want to do that, and they'll do it, and it's fine, it's great. But I just don't. I think the technology, hopefully, is going to get better in the user interface department.
It definitely has to get better in the user interface, just in terms of being. Because it's so funny, as technologically advanced as we feel like we are, we're uh-huh. still interfaced with machines the way machines would interface with.
Exactly.
We're still hunched over.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Many other.
Yeah. Every. Yeah. Yeah. Four. You know, it works 3 out of 5 times. Like we just don't. I mean, every time I'm always like, okay, well, I press the icon and then it's an animated expansion into the Apple app. It's like, first of all, get rid of the fucking animated expansion. Just make it. And I understand they're buying time
right.
for the program to load. And I get that. But technology should just be like, boom, boom, boom. It should be so fast and so intuitive that we just swim through the things that we want to do and then we put our technology away. I want technology to get the fuck out of the way. It's like so – it's ruling – we're basically repair technicians. We're walking IT people, like, constantly. Yeah. Like, oh, well, my Bluetooth, it's not connecting anymore. Let me go into my settings, turn off Bluetooth. No, wait a minute. Let me, you know, I'm going to have to reset the phone.
You're going to do a reset.
Like, all that crap. And then people walking around hunched over looking at phones. It's so inelegant. And we're in an interesting phase. There's a crossover point. I did try the Meta 2s, mm-hmm. The augmented reality, interactive augmented reality display system. I think that's promising because it frees up your hands and you're able to see graphical information just overlaid in your everyday world. It'll present a new set of problems. And actually, the movie that is out now, Creative Control, that I'm in.
That's the movie that you're in.
Yes, and that addresses that issue in an interesting way that probably will happen. But if you keep yourself in a tool mindset, productivity mindset, I think it will be an interesting way to interact with technology, because then your hands are free and you're just seeing things and using intuitive gestures to initiate things, as opposed to, oh, okay, here's an app. I'm so tired of like squares within squares within squares. It's so primitive to me. Like, I feel like our technology is so primitive.
You don't like the idea of digital nesting?
Yeah, not so much.
Another one.
It's
so tiny. It's so looking and vibrates. You can press and squeeze the screen.
It's just, and I'm like, why are phones rectangular? We don't need them to be rectangular. I understand video formats and all that, but they should be more ergonomic. They should feel better in our hands if we're going to use handheld technology. I just feel like we're not doing a very good job.
I'm telling you what I really would love to happen is receiver on the thumb, talk piece on the pinky.
Awesome.
So that everyone can do the stand-up comic telephone.
Yeah, totally.
Whenever someone makes a call. Yeah, so I'm on the phone the other day with the cable company. I'm like, come at, you know, it's like,
totally.
This is what I want to see. What I want to see, the phones.
I know. I just want to see, like, fun. Technology should be fun, and it should be creative, and it should inspire adventure.
If there was an implant that you could put, like, in your ear canal, sure, that you could then that was the only phone that you used, because mm-hmm. it would echo off your skull and mm-hmm. you could still hear. Would you want that? Because some of the things that it sounds like you want will involve a moderate amount of biological invasion.
Well, I mean, I think my thing is, I mean, you know, technology now can read. I mean, we can read brain waves, we can read brain activity, and now people are controlling robotic arms, which is thoughts, without having implants. I mean, they do implants, but now they have devices that can wetware that can analyze our brain activity and then interpret that into actions. And I think that there'll be plenty of opportunities for non-invasive technology, that something that you would just wear, like, you know, that goes behind your ear, mm-hmm. that takes care of all of that, like, without, because I the problem with technology is it's always going to upgrade, and if you're putting stuff in your body, you're going to have to how are you going to upgrade that, because the hardware is going to get old at a certain point.
Yeah,
and you're going to have to, like, take that out and get a new thing, and your body's going to go into weird rejection and all this. So it's actually not very efficient, I don't think, to, like, have implants. I think it's better for technology to be able to read our, you know, like, for instance, the Meta 2s, they have gaze detection. So you can not gay detection, but gaze detection, because that would be very homophobic. But it can. It's just like, you can't. You are gay. It's like, what? Wait, I just want to check my email. But it's like 72% gay.
All right.
I guess. Whatever.
Guess so.
Whatever. I like to fuck. But no. I mean, like, it can see where your eyes are. So, because, you know, when we're looking around, that's the problem with VR. It's like you just have this experience that you can look around, but your gaze isn't engaged. So, like,
right.
So as you're turning your head, your eyes are moving slightly. They're moving first before your head is moving, usually,
right,
when you're looking. So all of those little complicated things that make reality seem very rock solid are just now starting to enter into that. But the Meta 2s have that capability. Once that starts to happen, we'll notice that this graphical overlay will be very natural and very fluid, and it'll get out of the way. We can, like, get rid of it when we don't want it there. It'll be there when we need it. And customization, that's what I'm looking forward to, because right now we can't customize shit. Do you remember, like, early Nokias or, like, Sony Ericsson?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, tiny, tiny Sony Ericsson that had the first Bluetooth transmitter? I remember, like, I would run into another Bluetooth-enabled device, and I could just send a file.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's a file. I'll just send it. Or I'm going to record my my ringtone. Ring, 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 ring. And then just like assign.
I think a lot of that's probably
it.
Just proprietary licensing it is. Stuff. And they won't be like, all the companies are like, well, we're not going to fucking work with them. Like, there is.
Of course.
It's all possible. They just, the companies won't work together.
That's what I'm saying. But like, that, it's going to have to get back to that because it's not about that. It's about getting to the experiences. So people are hindering the pipelines to the experiences. They're like locking it up. A bunch of gatekeepers like, well, now you got to like buy a ringtone. You can make a ringtone, but you got to use this app and you have to buy it in order to make the ringtone. All that's like bullshit. People are going to get tired of that because someone's going to create a product that just bypasses all of that, which I'm really looking forward to. And then it's just about what are the experiences you're offering people? You know, there'll be I think that's inevitable because I think we're all going to get tired of like targeted commercials, targeted ads, proprietary, all of that stuff. It's just going to, I don't know, for me and for wire, you know, cutters or whatever, cable nevers or whatever they call it.
cable nevers.
Streamers. I don't know. Cable whatever they're nevers. Called. Cable nevers.
Like cord cutters was the word, but I really like cable nevers.
Cable nevers is like they didn't even
they
have.
They never had it.
They never had
they
it.
They never had
they
it.
They just went straight to streaming. But when you're streaming and you have something like Netflix, it's like, well, there's not an ad. That's my thing. I'm looking for what doesn't have a commercial in it. Because I want to experience things, but I don't want to be marketed to.
Well, I think marketing is. I think people don't mind as long as the marketing is.
Well, if it's relevant.
Relevant and seamless, and but I also wonder if they're going to be people who are kind of purists for human experience, where they don't want targeted ads. They just want ads that may not apply to them because it gives them some sort of
a worldly connection.
To be surprised, you know?
Yeah, like, of course.
But yeah, I know I'm already going to like. Shirtless pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch mopping a floor in a Victorian castle. I know I already like that. Stop bringing me that. Why did I go there?
Well, because it's that would be amazing.
You know
that's
what?
Why.
Gaze detection.
Gaze detection.
Gaze detection. But it was it really was our technology, the convenience of it. And the trying to serve ads to us to sell stuff directly, it is creating these weird narcissism bubbles where we just expect the world is going to bend over back. It's like, you know, when people go, well, I don't understand why this show didn't do this or didn't do that or they shouldn't. It's like, it's not, you know, the whole world isn't fucking Burger King. It's doesn't always have to be exactly for you. I think people seem so spoiled that they expect that everything needs to be tailored exactly for them. And if it's not, it's the worst thing ever. And it's like, it's not. Some things just aren't meant for you, you know, and that's okay.
It's called life.
That's called life.
It's just like life happens.
You need to create your own synthetic gravity, man.
Yeah, man. If only they could do that, man. So many problems would be solved.
This does weave somewhat seamlessly
yes.
into the film that you're in.
Oh, Creecon, yes.
Did you already shorten it?
I did, but no one else will.
So when did you do the movie?
We filmed, I think, 3 years ago, something like that. My parts and it finished filming 3 years ago, and then it took a long time for editing and special effects and finding someone to distribute it. Now it's on Amazon. So it was a while ago. I saw it for the first time a year ago at South by Southwest.
Creative Control.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Prince's Pussy Control.
No. Not to be confused. Often confused, but not to be confused.
Pucon?
Yeah, Pucon.
Pucon. When did it come out? When's the movie come out?
It's out now. It's out in L.A. It's at the Landmark. Something on the west side, which is a terrible
pitch me your movie place. Reggie,
it takes place in the near future. Augmented reality is now, there's a first product on the market that's very, very realistic and very believable, and it looks like a pair of Warby Parker glasses.
All right.
And then there's our character David. He works at a marketing firm. He's an artistic director, creative director, and this company Augmenta comes to him and says like, hey, we need help marketing our new augmented reality believable glasses. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, I can do that, but you know what? Here's my idea. I'm going to hire this weirdo named Reggie Watts to come and push the boundaries of your technology just to show what people can do with it. And then they're like, yeah, okay, that's great.
Now as a French guy.
And that was that wasn't a French guy.
I said now as a French guy.
Oh, now as a French guy. Yeah. Yes, right. And then, you know, of course, the lead of the marketing for Augmenta is is Jacques Lodwick, who created Vimeo.
Oui.
So we have Vimeo represented there.
Oui.
And yes, and so he becomes infatuated. David becomes infatuated
Australian.
With technology. Well, I don't know if I can do it that way, but I'll try. So this bloke goes, I don't know, I can't do that.
They're going to kill me. Sorry, Australia. Sorry, Australia.
It's boy, like, get him!
It's like, please stop. No, but he just becomes infatuated. He's an addict, and the technology just enables
this
his...
prick just went from Brisbane to Tasmania. It's
like, was it the map of Tasmania? Map of Tasmania.
Yeah, Amanda Palmer.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda Palmer. Great song. Bikini Lines. Yeah, basically, he just gets... He uses the technology in a very weird science kind of a way of, like, constructing his own perfect woman that he has a relationship with. And it kind of goes awry. It's just a composite that he falls in love with. But he's also an addict. And it just kind of shows you, like, when given an opportunity to, like, experience something great or to become involved in something potentially life-changing, people tend to pick the dumbest option, which is porn or some kind of a control, an addictive control. And so that's what he ends up using the technology for. And it's just like this beautiful downward spiral that you see him go into. And no one in the movie – it's great. No one in the movie is redeemable. There's not one redeemable character in the movie, and it's a very cold reality. And I think a lot of people misunderstood. Like, they're like, well, it's just a cold reality. I don't get it. It's like, no, it's the commenting on what could be in the future, which is this aesthetic bohemian existence, you know, that everyone's trying to buy into a high-end advertising lifestyle. And this technology kind of insulates us and kind of perpetuates our vision of ourselves. But it's very aesthetic. It's very surface. And seeing people addicted and self-absorbed living in these glass towers, it's really just a comment on where we're headed, you know. And that when I came out of that movie and I saw everybody walking down the street hunched over looking at their phones all the time, which I do and all of us do, and like always a phone in the hand, phone looking down at the phone all the time, I was like, it's happening. Like there is a version of that happening. And yeah, it's a good question. It's like what sci-fi does best. It asks interesting questions and hopefully starts some dialogue. So I really like the movie for that.
All right, I really liked the pitch. Mm-hmm. I just need you to know I'm not the executive. I'm just the janitor.
Motherfucker.
Kyle killed the previous executive.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But I'll allow it. I'm going to allow it. So we look. You got to wrap it all up.
Yeah, totally. It's good.
But I do look forward to the day where people are not hunched over their phones.
I know.
They are looking out at augmented reality, so everyone just is looking just past your
head. Yes.
Everyone's just looking all around your head, I still don't think augmented reality is going to solve the connection problem, because I think people still won't look at each other in the fucking eyeballs anymore.
No, it may not. But at least it'll be fun to play games together.
I agree.
Still see the room, not hit your head.
Reggie Watts, Creative Control, the movie is out now. The Late Late Show with James Corden, Monday through Friday,
I think.
Yeah, you do two shows Thursday, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Something like that.
You know I adore you, and I will always do anything for you, so please, you can take Kyle home if you want.
In fact,
I wish you would.
Take Kyle home contest. I want it.
Yeah.
thanks for inviting me. Anytime you have anything at all to do, I'm always there for you.
Excellent, man. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. You should tell people to enjoy their burrito.
Hey, guys, enjoy your burritos.
Now, British.
Hello, everyone. Please do enjoy and imbibe in burritos.
French again?
Hello, everyone. Please do not eat burritos. They are disgusting.
Other countries where I would have you do voices that don't seem racist.
Just... general kind of European guy. You know, say, hey, guys, that boy is cool. Hey, it's cool to eat burritos, guys. Come on.
I did the burrito in Ibiza one time.
Oh, that's so wonderful, Ibiza. It so rhyme with pizza.
It does not actually rhyme.
No, it does not.
That is not that
No, it does not. I'm
not
sorry.
That
I'm sorry.
I don't appreciate it.
I am from Mykonos.
You cannot...
I don't know who I am anymore.
That's the truest thing you've said, man.
What?
I don't know who I am.
Hey, stay tuned for Apple Dumpling Gang.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito. For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.